Hey, good morning again. My name is Sten, and I'm the pastor here, and we are really, really thrilled to have you here this morning. We are in week six of this series called Seven Decisions That Will Change Your Life. There's been five of them so far. Start, stop, stay, go, connect, and we think these are important decisions, and we've been talking about the significance of these decisions in our lives like this over the course of this series. We've been saying it's the decisions that we make today that determine the stories that we tell about our lives tomorrow, right? And so we really believe that these decisions, making them consistently and intentionally and daily in our lives, we think they really matter. So if you did miss any of the five of these, as Tina mentioned, your first best decision might be to jump on to that podcast online, midcurrentchurch.org, and you can catch up on them. It's been a really great series so far. This week, we're going to be talking about another decision that might not come naturally to you. In fact, I think most of us are hardwired. We're kind of naturally drawn to do the opposite of what I'm going to be talking about. We're kind of hardwired to do the opposite, I think, from the time we were young kids. But this morning, I want us to see that this very decision, it could be, I think, the X factor. It could be the game changer to some of the feelings of fulfillment and satisfaction that I think so many of us would love to experience in our life. And so if there's any part of you that's longing for something more, if there's, you know, maybe even something that you've been chasing after that you think will finally kind of bring you the completion or the satisfaction that you've really wanted in your life, then I'm really glad that you're here this morning. Because I think choosing to embrace this decision, it could be the best decision that you ever made in your life. And so I'm really glad you would be here this morning with us. In his book, Divine Direction, Craig Groeschel talked about what some argue was a massive, massive, massive cultural shift that changed everything in the year of 1973. I wasn't alive in 1973, so I'm just kind of taking other people's words for it here. So if I don't get something right, don't shoot the messenger here, okay? The specific cultural shift, this massive shift that he's referring to, that he thinks changed everything, and that some say changed everything. This specific shift, it had nothing to do with, you know, advancements in technology going on at that time. It had nothing to do with the advancements in commercial air travel that was happening in the 70s with the 747. It had nothing to do with America's involvement in Vietnam. It had nothing to do with some of the significant voting legislation that was passed in the 70s. It didn't have anything to do with any of that. As significant as some of that stuff was, what some argue was the moment that changed everything. It had nothing to do with any of that. This cultural shift that some do say changed everything was actually just a new marketing campaign, a slogan, if you will, from a fast food restaurant known as Burger King, okay? Until 1973, if you wanted a burger from a restaurant, it would come however that restaurant prepared it. If you didn't like the tomatoes, you'd go ahead and pick them off, right? If you didn't like the mayo or the mustard, grab a knife because you were going to be scraping that stuff off the top of the bun. Because how that burger was prepared was exactly how it was going to be served to you. Nothing provides a better picture of that than perhaps the world's most famous hamburger, the Big Mac, right? There was no build your own Big Mac, okay? If you ordered a Big Mac from McDonald's, here's exactly what you were getting. Nothing different. Two all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed. That came too quickly. Some of you need to go to Subway a little bit more than McDonald's, okay? It's the Big Mac. It's the Big Mac. That's exactly how it was ordered. And if you didn't like any part of it, sorry, right? Good luck picking all of that stuff out from all the rest, because how it was made, two all-beef patties, special stuff, how it was made was exactly how it was going to be served to you. That's how the restaurant world worked. That is until Burger King changed the game. Okay, in 1973, Burger King rocked the fast food world when they boldly declared that when you order a burger from Burger King, you could what? You could have it your way. You can have it your way, right? No pickles, no problem. No onions, no big deal. You want extra cheese? We'll take care of it, right? And so to help you remember this, Burger King came up with a little song of their own. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders, don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us serve you your way. Have it your way. Have it your way at Burger King. Okay? And those who suggest, people are for real about this, those who suggest that a massive cultural shift took place will suggest that, it was this game-changing move from Burger King that triggered something. They'll suggest that it was this bold, game-changing move from Burger King that, kind of triggered a self-centered and a consumer is king mindset. Consumer is king mindset that spread like wildfire. And with this consumer is king mindset firmly in place, there was a new sheriff in town who was always, always right. It was you, right? You deserve it. You're worth it. You get what you want. You should enjoy life your way. Okay, the consumer is king mindset, I think here they say it kind of started to shift everything because I think this consumer is king mindset, it slowly started kind of infiltrating the way that we do all of our life, right? So often it's kind of all about us, right? It's a me first world. It's a have it my way that we kind of go about what we do. Now, I'm not suggesting that we don't have any concern for others around us, right? I don't actually think that people here just have zero regard or zero concern for other people around us. I just think that we don't get around to it as much as we would like. Right? In some ways, I started thinking about this. In a lot of ways, I think we've taken the airplane oxygen mask approach to life. You know what they say on an airplane when they're giving you the little rundown, right? Secure your own mask first, and then you can assist others around you. I think sometimes that's kind of how we do this in life. We think, well, yeah, I care about others. Of course, I'm going to reach out to help other people around me. I'm just going to take care of me first, and then I'll assist others around me. Then I'll turn my attention to others. I'm going to get myself in a good place, and then I'm going to turn my attention to other people around me. It's a creative little loophole that we kind of come up with. The problem is we're rarely satisfied when we get or when we do or when we experience the one thing that we really wanted. Because as soon as we do, there's something else. There's something more. There's something new that we really need or want. And we're convinced this one will be it. This one will do the trick. This time, it'll be different. And I really will be, if I could just get this or do that or go there, or we'll think, you know, this time I'll really be satisfied. This time it'll all click. It'll all come together. And I don't think it ever really works that way. Right, so what I want to suggest this morning is that this have it your way approach to life, what I'm going to suggest is that the have it your way approach to life will always leave you empty. You'll always, you know, be feeling like you came up short. Always be gaining, right, but never really being satisfied. And so the real question is then, what is it that will truly satisfy? If so many of us are longing for kind of a sense of completion or fulfillment or satisfaction, what is it? Right? How do we go about achieving that? Right? What is it that will truly satisfy? And while I'll never know exactly how Jesus would order a Whopper from Burger King, I don't know what he would say is how he would have it his way. I don't know exactly what he would do, but he does have a conversation. I do know this. He does have a conversation with his disciples about food, of all things, and he makes a statement that I think should make us think twice the next time we're tempted to believe this have it your way approach to life is really what's going to satisfy. He makes a statement that I think suggests exactly what it is that has the power to satisfy some of our deepest needs. He suggests exactly what it is that has the power to satisfy us like nothing else will. In this conversation, it takes place in John chapter 4. John is simply a guy who lived and experienced what happened in Jesus' time on earth, and he wrote about what he saw and what he heard and what he experienced. And so this conversation with Jesus and his disciples takes place in John chapter 4. Jesus has just finished a conversation with a Samaritan woman at a well. In our series called Spread the Word, we looked at this this encounter, if you remember. Jesus offers her living water, he says to her, right? He says, this water that I offer you, you know, you take this and you'll never be thirsty again. And then he tells her everything she did, and she's amazed, and she goes home to tell her people, you got to come and see this man. He told me everything I ever did. And she paves the way for so many to you know, to learn about who Jesus is. So this has just happened. Jesus says, hey, I've got a water that will leave you thirsty no more. And then right after this very scene, in this very moment, Jesus meets up with his disciples. And that's what we're going to start reading here in John chapter 4, verse 31. It says this, meanwhile, the disciples were urging Jesus, Rabbi, eat something, right? It's like your grandma who's always like, you look thin, you need to eat something. They're saying, hey, Rabbi, Jesus, you got to eat something. Verse 32, but Jesus replied, get this. He says, I have a kind of food that you know nothing about. That they're only thinking about kind of earthly things here, and their misunderstanding here allows Jesus to press their thinking to another level. Just like when he tells the woman at the well that he has water that will, you know, mean she's never thirsty again. It's kind of the same thing he's suggesting here. That there's water, there's food that they know nothing about. And so the disciples, that they're not, you know, they're not really tracking here. Verse 33 says this, then the disciples asked each other, did someone bring him food while we were gone? They're like, they're thinking maybe there's a new Jimmy John's around town. Those guys are freaky fast, and so maybe they missed it. They don't know. They're going, could he possibly have eaten and we didn't know about this? But here's what Jesus has to say. Verse 34 says, then Jesus explained, my nourishment, the thing that satisfies me, the thing that fills me up, it comes from doing the will of God who sent me and from finishing his work. My nourishment, he says, comes from a different place. The thing that satisfies me, the thing that fills me up, it comes from somewhere else. So God the Father has given Jesus work to do on earth, and his mission is to see it to completion. And obeying the Father, doing the things that he's, you know, sent him to do is the more deeply satisfying activity for Jesus to be a part of. He goes on to say this, verse 35, he says, you know the saying, and in a moment he's going to start referencing local, like harvesting practices. He says, you know the saying, 4 months between planting and harvest, right? The farmer would plant his field and his crops, and then he would have 4 months to relax and to enjoy the promise of plenty. That's how it worked, right? You plant it, and then you kick back, and you get ready for the promise of plenty to be coming in. He says, you know the saying, 4 months between planting and harvest, but I say, wake up and look around, he says to them. Wake up and look around. The fields are already ripe for harvest. He's referencing, in a way, this conversation with the woman. He's referencing the seeds that he planted with the woman at the well, and she's telling everyone that they got to come find out more, and now these people from her hometown are starting to come and find Jesus. So he's telling his guys, hey, get ready. There's no time to just sit back and just wait for the time to come. He's saying the time is now, that there's work to do. There are seeds to be harvested. He goes on. He says, the harvesters are paid good wages, and the fruit they harvest is people brought to eternal life. And what joy awaits the planter and the harvester alike. You know the saying, he says to them again. One plants and another harvests. And it is true, he says. And then here's what he says to them, and I think in a lot of ways says to us. He says, I sent you to harvest where you did not plant. Others had already done the work, and now you will get to gather the harvest, right? So here's what's happening. God sent Jesus to earth with a mission. And Jesus wants to complete that mission. And Jesus is now sending us into the field to harvest what's already been planted. So here's how this works, right? Here's what I really believe. God is at work around us. I think God set his purposes into motion long ago. God sent Jesus to plant seeds in the hearts of, families and marriages. God sent Jesus to plant, seeds in our lives and in the communities around us and in places all around the world. God has sent Jesus to put this plan into motion, to plant seeds in our hearts. And Jesus is telling us it's now our job to pick up the baton. He's saying it's our job to join in on, to be a part of the work that God has set into motion. And Jesus is making it clear that this type of work that we're invited to be a part of, he's saying, hey, when we choose to participate in this, when we follow his lead, when we follow his example, it is the nourishment that will satisfy us in a way that nothing will. He's saying it's this work, it's this harvest, it's completing this mission that will satisfy us like nothing else will. Here's what that says to me for those of us who are trying to figure out a way to fill ourselves up and to find a satisfaction and to kind of fill maybe a void or a longing that we're feeling. Here's what all this says to me, right? That the quickest way for us to fill ourselves up and to find this feeling of satisfaction, the quickest way to fill ourselves up is to pour ourselves out. To pour ourselves out for others, to finish the work that God has already started in people and in places all around the world, to give ourselves to purposes larger than ourselves. And if that's going to happen for us, if that's really going to, become the reality for us, that we are filling ourselves up, that we're finding the same kind of satisfaction, that we're finding the same kind of nourishment that he's talking about, if that's going to happen, it's only going to happen when we make an important decision, right? A small, an intentional, but a consistent and a daily decision to serve others. Right, but in a lot of ways, it's more than just a decision to serve, right? It's more, it's making the decision that serving is just not what we do, but being a servant is who we are. Right, that's what God called us to be. That it's who we are, and it's who we want to be, servants. Right, to make the decision to serve, to put the needs of others ahead of our own, or to at least put them, on the same level as our own, to do for one person in our life what we wish we could do for everyone in our life, to do for someone else what someone else has already done for us. It's the decision to serve, right? To be a servant, to have the mindset of a servant. It's a powerful decision that I think when it's applied to our life, when that's the way that we think and that's the way that we operate, it's a powerful decision that I think could change everything. And what I love about so many of you that I get a chance to meet, I get a chance to know, what I love about so many of you that are connected here is that I know you do give your time to deserving places and people all the time, and that's great. And I don't know about all the people and all the places you do serve, but I do know primarily about the ways that so many of you serve and give of yourself and give of your time and give of your talents here. And I wish I could tell all of you about the stories. I wish I could tell you all the stories of all the people who do give of their time here. I wish I could tell you about all the guys who show up here at 7 a.m. every Sunday. I wish I could tell you about all they do to make this place feel like home, all they do to help, this place look and feel the way it does. I wish I could tell you, the stories about guys like John who just last Sunday pulled our trailer out of the most impossible location, blocked by a roofing truck on the property. But he finds a way to get the trailer here so that this place can feel like home. I wish I could tell you about guys like Justin who literally have hand-built like 90% of what's in this building, right? Like everything aside from the building itself, good chance he built it. Or I wish I could tell you about all the people behind the scenes who have pulled off some of the most fun and some of the most memorable events that we've ever held here. It's people like Rita who played a vital role in a retreat for almost like 30 women last fall who said that's the best thing I've ever been a part of. People like Hannah who've planned and organized this 4th of July parade that we're getting ready to do again, or the fall kickoff that started a whole new year of ministry for us last year. Or people like Amber whose fingerprints are literally all over some of the hospitality that you experience when you walk in these front doors. Or people like Sarah who organized a race
with over 100 people that raised nearly $5,000, not for us, but nearly $5,000 to bring clean water to kids in the developing world. I wish I could tell you about all the people who sacrifice week in and week out to teach and to lead our kids every Sunday morning. It's people like Cammie who, on top of being a full-time teacher, on top of being a wife, and on top of being a mom, voluntarily leads our Mid-Current Kids ministry that sees sometimes almost 70 kids a morning. The average church in America these days, they say, is like 75 people. And Cammie and her team, they have that in just like the 10 and under crowd alone. And they have a blast. Truthfully, Cammie was supposed to be here this morning. We were planning to have her be here this morning to tell you her story in person, but we didn't have the teachers to fill in for her, and so she's at her post like she is every Sunday morning, teaching and leading our kids and helping even the littlest among us to meet a real God who loves them. Here's what I know is true for everyone giving of themselves here. It would be so much easier. I know this. It would be so much easier for them to just keep going to church. So much easier for so many people just to make the decision to keep going to church. But they made the decision to stop going to church and to start being the church. And it's made a massive difference in the hearts and in the lives of so many. The hard part is, I think for most of us, we like church. I get this. We like church the way we like our burger. We want to have it our way. Right, well, I really prefer this type of music, but with that type of preaching. And I love the 10 a.m. service, although 10:30 will be a little more helpful to give us a little time to get out the door. And if you could actually bump that up to 9:30, that would help with football games starting at noon. This is how we think, right? We like church like we like our burgers. Let's have it our way. So much easier. It's so much more convenient to go to church rather than to be the church. But I believe that it's so much more satisfying the other way around. To be the church rather than to just go to church. To be a part of, to be a major player in what God is doing. To harvest the seeds, to go into the field and to harvest the seeds that God has been planting for generations and is still planting now. In the greater St. Croix Valley, to fill ourselves up by pouring ourselves out for something more, by pouring ourselves out for something bigger than ourselves, in the church or in the world or in the community around us. And I think it starts with this intentional and this daily decision, or more so this mindset that we got to choose, this mindset to serve, to be a servant. Jesus came not to be served, not to have it his way, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And I'm hoping that we would make in our lives, in our homes, in our families, in our offices, in our workplace, in our communities, in our neighborhoods, I'm hoping we would make the very same decision. And I believe it could be the best decision we ever made. Here's why. This whole series, Seven Decisions That Will Change Your Life, this whole series is built on the idea that the decisions that we make today will determine the stories we tell about our lives tomorrow. It's true. But when it comes to this decision to serve, this mindset to be a servant, I'd almost take it one step further. I think it's this decision to serve and to be a servant that not only determines the stories we tell about our lives tomorrow, but it's a decision that determines whose story and what story we get to be a part of tomorrow. It's a decision to serve that determines whose story and what story we get the privilege and the joy and the honor to be a part of tomorrow. See, years from now, I really believe that stories will be told about the ways that God was at work, maybe in powerful ways, maybe in dramatic ways in the life of people around us. And one of two things will be true. When these stories are told, one day you'll either be reading about those stories or you'll be one of the supporting actors right in the middle of it. One day stories will be told and you'll either be reading about it or you'll be a part of it. One day a family in your neighborhood It's going to tell the story of the unimaginable support that showed up out of nowhere for them in their time of greatest need and in their darkest hour. One day, someone in your family, or in your neighborhood, is going to tell that story. You can read about that story, or you can be the one who showed up on the front door. One day, a teenager is going to tell the success story on some big stage of when he turned his life around, when he left a life of drugs and violence and, you know, whatever behind him. And you can either read that story and say, well, hey, that's cool. Or you could be the mentor. Or you could be the big brother. You could be the big sister or the cousin or the best friend who spoke into his life or spoke into her life at a moment when it mattered the most. It's a decision. It's a mindset to serve, to finish the work that we've been sent to do. One day the stories are going to be told here. If we talk about this church now, right? There's plenty of places in the world, in the community that we can serve, and one of those places is here. One day the stories are going to be told about when this church first began. We'll say, man, remember when there was just like 30 of us? Hoping that just somebody would show up, right? Years from now, the story's going to be told, hey, remember there was just 50 of us then? Remember there was 100 of us? Years from now, when we look back, you can read about those stories from the sidelines or you can be a part of them. You can help us to keep writing them and to help us keep writing the next chapter at Midcurrent, the next chapter of being a place where real people and a real God meet. Because one day some pastor or some worship leader, some, you know, teacher, some counselor is going to say they wouldn't be here today. They wouldn't be where they are today if it weren't for their third grade teacher in Midcurrent Kids downstairs. You can read that story and you can think, well, hey, that's pretty cool. Or you could be that teacher. One day someone's going to tell the story of walking into this church for the very first time. And they'll say, man, that I was scared out of my mind to walk into a church for the first time. They'll say, but someone smiled at me and someone held open a door for me as if they were expecting me. And it changed everything, right? You can read that story or you can be the one that was holding open the door. Right? One day someone's going to tell the story of sitting in these seats for the very first time and they'll describe a moment that when the guitars began to strum and the doors to their heart unlocked and opened for the first time. You can read that story someday or you can be the one strumming that guitar. And the list goes on and on. If I understand what Jesus is really getting at, all of these things could be the most satisfying, could be the most nourishing, could be the most fulfilling things that we ever did. To be a part of something bigger than ourselves. To harvest the seeds that God has been planting. And the good news is our opportunities to serve others around us, to give ourselves to these purposes that are greater than ourselves, they're endless. These opportunities are around us every single day. And I'm praying that we would make the decision to serve, to be servants, to do it God's way, when it would be so much more convenient, so much more appealing, so much easier to have it our way. And I think when we do, we'll be far more satisfied than we ever imagined was possible. Let me pray for us. God, I know from my own life and from my own experience, there are just moments and there's times where I kind of feel like, man, is this it? I mean, is there something more? I know there's moments when you feel like you're, you know, the wheels are spinning and things are churning, but you're just like, I don't know if I feel so complete. I don't know if I'd feel as satisfied as I thought I would with my, you know, wheels spinning so fast. God, I know what it's like to have, you know, seasons of life that feel like that. God, I just am grateful for these words here that remind us that maybe there's some kind of satisfaction. Maybe there's a sense of fulfillment and nourishment that comes from something so different, God. Would you help us to discover what that is
for us. God, if it's really true that making the decision to be a servant, that making the decision to serve others, not just once in a while, not just as something we do, but to, you know, as decision that means this is who we are, God, I just pray that that would have a way of bringing satisfaction and fulfillment in our life like we never imagined was possible. God, not only do we fill ourselves up, but we also join in the work that you are doing, and I believe you're working. God, I believe you're doing great things in and around us and in our families and in this community, God. So not only do we fill ourselves up, but we also complete the things that you set in motion long ago, and we want to be about those things, God. We want to see hearts encouraged. We want to see lives changed. We want to see marriages and families strengthened. We want to see addictions defeated, God, people set free, chains released, hearts opened. And so, God, I'm praying that more and more of us would make a decision to serve, make a decision to have the mindset to be a servant in more places with more people around us every single day. Would you help us to do these things, God, in the places where we have influence around us, with the gifts and the talents that you've given us, God, would you help us to do this so that you would be honored in all that we do? We pray this in your name. Amen.